Ayyanapa Monastery.
The monastery of Ayyanapa and its namesake village are located in the Famagusta district in southeast Cyprus. The name Napa derives from the ancient Greek word napi, which means wooded valley or canyon. The word is mentioned in Homer's Iliad, in Pindar's Pythian Odes, and later in the Christian hymnology. In the past, there was lush vegetation in that part of the Famagusta district, whereas in the area where the village and monastery exist today, there used to be an idyllic wooded valley with springs. In ancient times, there was a Greek city named Throni in that valley, and a temple dedicated to Aphrodite. With the advent of Christianity, the city declined, and eventually all that remained was ruins. However, the valley, with its dense forest and plentiful water supply, became popular with hunters who converged here in search of game. When the miraculous icon of Virgin Mary was found, the word spread quickly to the neighbouring villages, and the cave in that remote valley became a shrine and a sacred pilgrimage for Orthodox Christians of the area. That icon was named the Icon of Ayyanapa, that's the Icon of Virgin Mary of the Forest, and the shrine was named Ayyanapa. The area around the monastery was uninhabited until 1790, when a group of people arrived there having fled Thessaloniki because of an outbreak of cholera. Of that group, only Nicholas Kemitzis and his son survived. The son later married a Cypriot girl from the village of Panaya, located in the hills north of the monastery, from where the water of Ayyanapa flows. However, the couple didn't settle in Panaya because of a fierce dispute between the villagers and the Turkish authorities of Famagusta over the water supply. Instead, they decided to find safe haven outside the monastery, thus marking the beginning of the village that was eventually named after the monastery of Ayyanapa. We're not certain when exactly the monastery was founded. The cave, the hiding place, and the well in the monument's grounds all bear witness to the settlement of a Christian community in the area since the Byzantine era. The monastery was named Ayyanapa before 1366. However, the existing monument is a 15th century building when Cyprus was under Venetian rule. Ayyanapa is first mentioned in 1366 when, according to Leontios Macheras, the king, Peter I, wrote a letter to the Pope and gave it to the Admiral, and the Admiral left Famagusta and came to Ayyanapa. Macheras mentions Ayyanapa again in 1373, describing the wreck of five ships laden with booty seized by the Genovese during the looting of Cyprus. Strambaldi also provides an account of those events. We have no other written record regarding Ayyanapa during the Frankish occupation, 1192 to 1489. It is mentioned again in the report on Cyprus submitted to Venice in mid-16th century and in Venetian maps, also of the 16th century. Local tradition has it that a hunter found the miraculous icon of the Virgin Mary in the cave, which was subsequently turned into a church. It is said that the hunter's dog was the first creature to lay eyes on the glowing icon and began barking insistently, calling his master. Upon hearing of the discovery, swarms of faithful Christians started visiting the sacred site. The icon had probably been carried to the cave during the iconoclasm, 7th to 8th centuries, to save it from destruction. In the 14th century, the cave was expanded into a church. Also, according to local tradition, the daughter of a noble Venetian family took refuge in that place because she would not obey her parents, who refused to bless her marriage to a commoner. Around 1500, the wealthy Venetian lady financed the building of the church, cells for the nuns, and an oil mill. She also planted a sycamore tree close to the south entrance of the monument, next to the water cistern. In all likelihood, however, the oil mill was erected in the monastery during the Ottoman occupation, between 1571 to 1878. The monastery seems to have been built gradually, and research has confirmed that a part of the church was used as a Latin chapel. According to a study sponsored by the municipality and the Church of Ayyanapa, the chapel operated in the right aisle. When the wealthy lady's days were drawing to a close, she had the vaulted stone monument built in the centre of the courtyard. She wished to be buried there, next to the cooling fountain. On the north side of the cloister, there's a second fountain, shaped like a wild boar's head. The view that Ayanappa was the site of the monastery of Sancti Giorgi di Dadi is considered groundless. Consequently, the theory based on that view, as well as on the inscription mentioned by the Englishman Drummond, that is, that originally the monastery was Latin and not Greek Orthodox, is erroneous. Besides, there are references to the St. George Monastery in the Dadi's Promontory or Cape Bila in the 7th century. That monastery is far away and its church is Orthodox. The only established fact is that the right aisle of the church was used as a Latin chapel. It's also a fact that Latin monasteries didn't operate again during the Ottoman occupation, not even as Orthodox ones. They were abandoned and gradually fell into ruins. The Ayanappa Monastery was already mentioned as a convent in 1625 by Pietro della Valle, who visited it. This is also corroborated by Stefanos Lusignanos's reference to the miraculous icons of Virgin Mary. Alexander Drummond, who visited Cyprus in the Ayanappa Monastery twice, in 1745 and again in 1750, found a Latin inscription referring to the reconstruction of the monastery in 1530. That inscription, which has not survived, read as follows. Hoc opus fieri fecerunt, gubernatores fraternitatis, sancte nape, duces et, pro Hieronymus de, Salaceris oremesis, civis famagustanus, ad honorem, betai, verginis, 1530. In other words, the inscription was about the arched southwest gate and the two-story building facing the modern village square, which serves as a secondary entrance. These structures, especially the two-story one with the Venetian windows, date back to the 16th century. The fountain at the centre of the courtyard must also be dated to the same period. The other buildings, including the church, are older. As already mentioned, in 1625, Ayanappa was a convent. However, we don't know whether the same was true during Frankish and Venetian rule. A few years later, in 1668, it seemed that it had become a monastery. And yet, it never did seem to attract large numbers of monks, notwithstanding its huge landed and movable property. According to the Archbishopric Land and Property Register of 1758, the estate of the monastery of Ayanappa included many tracts of land, farms and olive trees, which reached as far as Kadolefkara. It also owned two metochia, that's dependencies, one in Prastio and one in Ormidia. Further, the monasteries of St. George of Hortakia, to the west of Sotira, and of St. Nicandros had been annexed to Ayanappa. There are references to sizable flocks of sheep and goats, oxen and other animals. However, the same record includes a very small number of mattresses and oil lamps in the monastery, which suggests that only three or four monks must have lived there. For reasons unknown, the monastery of Ayanappa shut down the same year. A few years before, reference had been made to people who lived here, Abbot Pieris, for instance, who had travelled to Constantinople in 1668 to bring a firman issued by Sultan Mehmet confirming the ownership of the monastery's estate. Another reference is that of 1773 to the monastery's housekeeper known as Father Makarios. The monastery seemed to have operated again a little later. Three monks are said to have lived here in 1800 under supervisor Ioannikios. A year later, the monastery had employed people to do its farm work and had a boat in partnership with Antonis Zimbulus from Larnaca. According to an inscription built into the wall of the monastery's northeast wing, Core Bishop Spiridon of Trimithunda ordered repair works in 1813. It was probably at that time that the entrance opposite the fountain was narrowed and the arched gate we see today was constructed. However, the monastery was dismantled again during the 1821 massacres by the Ottoman Turks at the time of the outbreak of the Greek Revolution. The Trimithunda core bishop managed to escape abroad. The monastery estate was leased out to various farmers. In 1878, when Cyprus came under British rule, the monastery cells were in ruins. Only the church had become the parish church of the village. In 1950, the monument underwent major restoration work. The Church of Cyprus subsequently proposed that the monastery be turned into an ecumenical conference centre. However, life on the island was disrupted because of the 1974 Turkish invasion, and no action was taken in regard to that proposal. 2 years later, thanks to the generous contribution of the Evangelical Church of Westphalia, the necessary work commenced, and the centre was inaugurated in 1978, becoming a meeting venue for the Christian churches of Cyprus and the Middle East. Let us now take a virtual tour of the monument. Starting at the village square, we take the steps or the uphill paved path and reach the huge sycamore tree, listed by the Forestry Department among the ancient trees of the island. It is 600 years old and believed to be the tree planted by the wealthy Venetian maiden. A small monument can be seen in the shade of that tree. It's dedicated to the Greek Nobel laureate George Seferis, who visited Aia Napa and composed his poem Aia Napa, part of his collection Ημερολόγιο Καταστρώματος 3, Logbook 3, entitled Cyprus, Where Apollo Ordered Me to Live, Icarus Edition, Athens, 1955. We enter the monastery through its massive southern gate, where the pebble-paved cloister leads us to the rectangular courtyard surrounded by ashlar-built structures of various periods. The north, east and south sides of the courtyard are taken up by the monastic buildings, whereas the church, partly cut in rock, is located on the western side. The oldest part of the monastery comprises the four cross-vaulted cells of the east wing. The two other cells with the pointed arches in the same wing are newer, while the cloister with the arches running its length is a later addition. A part of those cells housed the sanitation facilities. The north wing cells, where there is now a small shop, are also later additions. In the far right corner, we see the oil mill, constructed during the Ottoman occupation. In the same wing, close to the north gate, stands the two-story building added in 1530, according to the inscription Alexander Drummond had seen, which is probably associated with the wealthy Venetian maiden. That edifice stands out not only because of its meticulous construction, but also because of the impressive upper-floor windows framed by elaborate columns supporting semicircular arches in the Venetian tradition. The relief coat of arms and the flagpole holders visible in the northern wall bear witness to the past glory of this monument. Contemporary with the two-story building is the equally impressive fountain in the centre of the courtyard. It is an octagonal structure of limestone blocks with a low enclosure forming stone benches. The fountain is covered with a cupola standing on four pillars supporting pointed arches. At the centre of the enclosure, there's a marble fountain with a short column crowned with an Ionian capital, out of which water used to flow. The outer sides of the fountain are decorated with a garland in relief and with three faces. According to tradition, they are the portraits of the Venetian lady and her parents. The coats of arms, which were also part of the decoration, are too damaged to shed any light on the identities of those faces. Only one coat of arms, according to Gunnis, belonged to the De Brie or the De Viet family. The water that springs up in the fountain and spouts out of the Roman period boar head in front of the two-story building is channeled here via the medieval aqueduct, which is 2 kilometres long. From those points, an underground conduit diverts it to the large cistern outside the monastery's south wing next to the main gate. The south gate building is finely constructed and simple. It consists of three adjacent open rooms with cupolas resting on vaults. By contrast, the western room is an enclosed one and occasionally serves as a venue for a charity handicrafts bazaar. Concluding our tour inside the monastery, we come to the truly impressive church on the west side of the courtyard. In actual fact, it's a cluster of churches. Facing the courtyard with the rosette and the frame above its original door, it is a typical example of a 14th century medieval monument. Descending several steps, we enter the church, which is divided into two unequal naves. The first one is a large, simple square area with just a few contemporary icons of saints on the walls. This nave serves as a sales point for icons and ecclesiastical items. The nave on the right is narrower. It's the one used as a Latin chapel during the 16th century. In the far right corner, there are some half-damaged murals of the 15th century, with marked Italian influence, depicting three sainted women. In the back of the first nave, two steps lead down to the rock-cut church, believed to date back to the Byzantine era. It was there, as tradition has it, that the hunter and his dog found the miraculous icon of Virgin Mary. A feeling of true religious devotion emanates from that place, enhanced by the simple iconostasis separating the sanctuary from the nave, where there are wooden seats for worshippers and visitors. On the wall to the right of the iconostasis, we see a large votive icon of Virgin Mary, dedicated in 1962 by a Famagusta family, prompted by the Virgin, who appeared in a vision. Around and below the icon, there are silver and wax votive offerings left by believers who've asked for the Virgin's help. Various sacraments, such as marriage and baptism, continue to be celebrated at this oldest of the monastery churches, and Mass is held on minor holidays which fall on weekdays. The miraculous icon of the Virgin found in the cave is now on the iconostasis of the large church to the southwest of the monastery, built in 1990 and also dedicated to Virgin Mary. The belt of the saint of Ayia Napa is considered miraculous as well. It's kept in a large adjacent church to the southwest of the monastery. Many women who are infertile or experience difficulties in pregnancy come to the church every day to put on the belt. On the 8th of September, the church celebrates the Nativity of Virgin Mary and a large fete is held. The interior of the church is also impressive, with the murals painted by religious artist Sozos Yiannoudis and his team. The monastery site attracts not only many profoundly religious worshippers, but also visitors who are interested in ancient monuments. Moreover, many young newlyweds come to be photographed in this idyllic environment. It should be noted that many festivals take place at the monastery throughout the year. It's an ideal venue for the medieval festival, which is organised by the municipality of Ayia Napa every October. It has been established as an annual event since 2006, lasts 1 week, and includes musical, theatrical and dance performances. The September Ayia Napa Festival is another established event since 1985. It takes place in the square at the southern gate of the monastery and lasts 3 days. Many other art and cultural events take place at the same square in May, June, July and August, the peak tourist period. Exiting the monastery through the southern gate, we can see at a glance that the buildings surrounding this ancient monument have one feature in common. Almost all are contemporary, since they were built after 1974. The Turkish invasion destroyed 95% of the island's tourism. Consequently, we had to develop the free part of Cyprus. The small fishing village of Ayia Napa was turned into a major tourist destination in record time. During the first years of development, Ayia Napa attracted visitors mainly in the summer. Now, several hotels operate throughout the year, thanks to winter and sports tourism. Within the Ayia Napa municipality, there are other monuments and interesting sites that attract visitors. The Ayia Napa Aqueduct is one of the few that survive in Cyprus. It's also known as the Medieval Aqueduct, although its foundations date back to the Roman period. It is 2 kilometres long, from Manadou Nerou, that's water spring, to the northeast of Ormidia village, to the monastery, and follows the easiest route possible given the existing topography. The water was channeled to the centre of the monastery courtyard and to the huge cistern under the sycamore tree in front of the southern gate. It was used for the irrigation of the vegetable gardens on the slope between the monastery and the sea. In 2006, the Department of Antiquities undertook the excavation and maintenance of the aqueduct under the Interreg III programme. The Thalassa Municipal Museum is housed in an interesting polyvalent building around 300 metres to the east of the monastery. The focus of the museum is the sea and its role and importance in the history of the island since antiquity. The Makronissos tombs are located to the west of Ayia Napa, in the Makronissos locality. 17 tombs have been uncovered there, dating from the Greco-Roman period, 4th century BC to 4th century AD. Movable finds are scant as a result of illegal excavations in 1872 during the Turkish occupation. The Department of Antiquities excavated the area in 1974 and, more recently, in 1989-90. The finds that came to light date back to the Cypro-Classical and Hellenistic periods, that is, from the 5th to the 1st centuries BC. Our eyes are drawn to small churches and chapels, St. Mavra, St. Anthony, St. Barbara, Ayia Nargiri, St. Epiphanios, St. Thecla, cut in the rock by the sea, a few kilometres to the west of Ayia Napa, St. George, St. Paraskevi, St. Timothy and Mavra, Apostolos Andreas and Prophetis Elias. The rocky Cavo Greco Cape, located between the popular resorts of Ayia Napa and Protaras, constitutes a major attraction, both for the endless view it offers and for its hiking trails. It is a wilderness of rare natural beauty, which has been declared a national forest park and nature reserve. One of its trails is part of the E4 European Long Distance Path, extending from Gibraltar to Cyprus. The trail is 2 kilometres long and goes through the southeast coast of Cape Greco, which is included in the Aphrodite cultural route, since the area is associated by tradition with the existence of the sanctuary. Sea lovers can luxuriate on the golden sandy beaches that offer unique experiences and magic moments. Ayia Napa, Ayia Thecla, Nisi, Konos, Makronissos, Londa, Vathia Konia, Bernera, Katsarka, Pantahou, Glikinero, Amos du Kampouri and Kermia. All these beaches are regularly awarded the EU Blue Flag. The view from the sea can be just as spectacular. You could admire places such as Palatia and the Thalassines Spilies sea caves between Kermia Beach and Cape Greco. 10-metre-high caves carved by nature in the limestone rock so masterfully that they were deservedly named Palatia, palaces, by the locals. Ayia Napa is truly ideal for sea sports fans, while its crystal-clear blue waters hold a breathtakingly beautiful wealth which will enchant even the most seasoned divers. But if you're simply looking for a spot to relax while basking in the sun and enjoying the view and the caress of the light sea breeze, you're in the perfect place. The cozy harbour of Ayia Napa is the starting point for a short boat ride along the coast. There's an indoor track for sport lovers, and a wide choice of open-air activities as well. Archery, soccer, nature trails, especially the Kermia to Ormidia E4 trail, bicycle tracks, especially the 32-kilometre circular route starting at Ayia Napa and terminating at the Xylophagou medieval tower. The area is also famous for its amusement park known as Luna Park, as well as for its water park. Ayia Napa nightlife is a reference point, mainly for the young, during the summer months. Letting our thoughts drift back to the Ayia Napa Monastery, and in particular to its gate with the sycamore tree, let us dwell for a moment on George Seferi's poem Ayia Napa, part of the 1955 collection Imeroloio Katastromatos Tria, Logbook 3, which he dedicated to Cyprus, as translated by Edmund Keeley and Philip Sherard. Under the aging sycamore, madly the wind was playing, with the birds, with the branches, but it never spoke to us. Welcome and good luck, O breath of the soul. We opened our hearts to you. Do come in, do drink in your fill of our desire. Under the aging sycamore, the wind rose up and left, gone to the northern castles, and never touched us even. O my rosemary, O my thyme, bind your breast tightly, and find a cave, find a lair, and hide away your light. This is no Palm Sunday wind, no wind of the resurrection, but a wind of fire, a wind of smoke, a wind of joyless life. Under the aging sycamore, the wind returned dry, reeking of florins everywhere, and bartered us for gold. The poem was set to music by Ilias Andriopoulos and was included in his work Argonaftes, Argonauts, along with poems by Manos Eleftheriou and Nikos Gatsos. Aia Napa was first performed by Nick Xylouris and subsequently by Nena Venetsanou.